Hi, everybody. We are about to begin Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 58. I believe that is correct. Yes, we've ended 57. We were talking about six potencies which produce release from bondage, from the bondage of form, entered into in Cancer. As far as the mass of humanity is concerned, by this I mean the birth of the human kingdom as a whole, and in Pisces as far as the individual is considered. There does seem to be a little bit of a possible contradiction there, as DK does say here that Cancer is opening the door into mass life, and then he seems to say that the very first incarnation is taken in the sign Cancer. By that I mean, he says, the very first human incarnation was always taken in this sign, which has been recognized down the ages as the doorway into life of those who must know death. And so we have to contrast that statement about the very first incarnation with the statement here that as far as the individual is considered, he enters into form for the first time in Pisces. And by entry into form, I presume this means entry into incarnation. The six potencies, I propose there were two ways to look at them, but increasingly I feel that the way to consider the six potencies which produce release from the bondage of form are Venus and Earth as two planets, and then the four constellations on the mutable cross. I think there's a very close connection here. The pairs of opposites called spirit and matter can be related to Pisces and Virgo, depending on which way you want to look at it. Sometimes Pisces can represent spirit and Virgo can represent matter, or it can be reversed, and water is matter, is Pisces, and Virgo is the ruler of the plane of spirit, monadic plane. So that is a major pair of opposites, and it has to do with the highest aspect of man and his lowest aspect. Then we understand that through the rulership of Venus and the Earth, we are bringing in, we have four potencies so far, we're bringing in Gemini and Sagittarius, with Gemini ruled by Venus and Sagittarius by the Earth. And here we have a pair of opposites which relates not so much to spirit and matter, but to soul and personality. For in a way, Gemini rules the soul and Sagittarius the personality. We have the esoteric factor in the Venus rulership of Gemini, and there we find the solar angel. We have the animal factor in Sagittarius ruled by the Earth, or hierarchically by Mars. We have animal man of the third kingdom, represented by Sagittarius. We have the angelic winged kingdom, represented by Gemini. And so the interplay between them produced individualization, represented by Leo, or the light coming into expression, first as a tiny point and then growing into the personal ego and finally into the higher self and eventually universal self, realization, all of that under Leo. So here are the six potencies which produce release from the bondage of form. First, upon the plane of Earth, we have the man of form. We have the animal man in relation to Sagittarius and the Earth, but that animal man aspires. He aspires towards something higher. He aspires towards the Jiminian state, in which the higher brother, I recognize my other self, and in the waning of that self, I grow and glow, in which that higher brother becomes effulgent, and man enters the true soul state. He is deeply embedded in matter because Venus has fallen into matter. This is the sign of the solar angels having fallen into matter, and thereby serving. And eventually we have the exaltation of Venus rising into Pisces when the work of the solar angels is consummated. And then man is prepared to begin to live the life of the triad, which is an extension of the monad, with which Pisces can be strongly associated. I, the monad, leave my father's home, and turning back, I save. It's interesting when we consider Venus that it has a relationship with Virgo, which is its fall, with Gemini, which represents the soul state, and with Pisces, which represents the liberation of the soul. And then opposite Gemini, we have Sagittarius, in which the earth is found, but not Venus. The earth is found as an esoteric ruler. So three of the constellations of the mutable cross are closely related to Venus, and one of them is not. One of them is more related to the animal nature. So in a way, we have a condition of the fallen Venus in Virgo, representing the very beginning of the life of animal man who has entered the human kingdom. We have Sagittarius representing animal man who began to aspire towards a higher state. We have the opposite sign of Sagittarius, in which the soul magnetically draws the embedded consciousness towards a higher state of consciousness, its own soul consciousness. We have the solar angel working magnetically. And finally, from the very fallen state, we have the exalted state with Venus in Pisces, where freedom is achieved, the freedom of the solar angel to return to its home within the sun, its temporary home at least, and man to rise up and to the feet of the solar angelic kingdom and become a winged creature, one who is free from the lower elemental life, one who, from the perspective of the higher lives, is no longer considered to be an elemental life, but has his wings conferred at the fourth initiation, and therefore can fly in the plane of air, and that is the Buddhic plane, and from a higher perspective, all of the cosmic ethers represent the winged kingdom in which the consciousness can fly. So that's the story of bondage, which the Earth and Virgo represent, and liberation, which Gemini and Venus, and finally Pisces, represents complete liberation of the soul from the lower kingdoms. Okay, now we can move on to Esoteric Astrology Adventure 58. In pointing out the significance of the above facts, I am not considering the orthodox astrological reasons for the exaltation and the fall of certain planets and certain signs. And that is actually somewhat mathematically based, as there are degrees of fall and exaltation. And they usually have to do with explanations which are not very occult, do not concern the soul or spirit. I am concerned with the effect of the waxing and the waning influence upon the subject man. So the planets have influence which waxes and wanes. And there is an effect, and some of these influences lift a man very high, and some seem to hold him in a state of suppression. So we're dealing with psycho-spiritual reasons for exaltation, falls, and detriments. We have to consider the soul nature and spirit nature of man, and this, of course, ordinary astrology, whereas it may hint at that occasionally, does not explicitly deal with man, the ego on the higher mental plane, and man, the spiritual triad, and man, the monad, on the monadic plane. It deals mostly with man, the personality, and his fate in the lower three worlds. Bear this in mind, he says, and at the same time remember that we are occupied with the great illusion, which it is the major task of man in this particular world cycle to master, man becoming the world disciple. And, you know, sometimes when he talks about the great illusion, we don't have to consider the entire universe, although, in a way, Brahmins certainly do consider the entire world to be the Mahamaya, or the great illusion. But we can consider the three lower subplanes of the cosmic physical plane. In other words, the dense physical body of the solar logos is considered the realm of the great illusion. And it is our task to master this and to dissipate this and begin to live more according to the principles that are found in the second solar system, begin to live the cosmic etheric life, no longer trapped by the energy residuals of the previous solar system. So we are occupied with a great illusion. It is our task to dispel and dissipate that illusion in this particular world cycle, and so to inaugurate the reign of the real. A very memorable kind of phrase due to the alliteration, the reign of the real. And where does the real begin? You know, from the perspective of the second solar system, the real begins on the Buddhic plane, which is in the cosmic etheric body of the solar logos. That's where the real begins. Buddhi, with its emphasis upon pure reason and straight knowledge and intuition, is the place of the clear, cold light, which is no longer confused by Maya, glamour, and illusion. It is the revelation of the real, which is the task of all initiates, until after the final experience of the 12 final tests in the 12 signs. He talks about these 12 tests as if they are kind of a unified experience. Now, to reveal the real, we recall the nature of the five initiations, and there are five words which are associated with each of these initiations. For the first initiation is know, for the second initiation express, for the third initiation, and this is germane here, reveal, and then for the fourth it is the crucifixion, destroy, and then for the fifth initiation, resurrect, even though the real resurrection occurs at the seventh initiation. There's a kind of resurrection out of the lower 21 subplanes, which occurs at the fourth initiation. So the revelation of the real fits very well with the third initiation, the key note or key word of which is reveal. It is the revelation of the real which is the task of all initiates until after the final experience of the 12 final tests in the 12 signs. And presumably these tests, I presume, will occur before the fourth initiation. Hercules, the disciple becoming the triumphant disciple, is not demonstrating the life of the fourth initiation particularly, maybe in the final labor where he's saving the red cattle in a chalice, the cattle of Geryon. Perhaps that is a bit like world saviorship. But generally, he is not moving quite as far as becoming a master of the wisdom. So I think the 12 tests, I suspect, must occur leading to the fourth initiation. Therefore, when we find that the power of Mercury is lessened in Pisces, that's initially, and that it finally falls, so we have two stages there, lessening and fall, and DK is speaking of diminishment and a final bondage of the faculties, the ordinary faculties of Mercury. So we have two stages here. Until it finally falls in that sign, what is the esoteric and spiritual meaning? Well, let's see what he says. We know, of course, that Mercury in Pisces can be found in the chart of some very astute individuals. They will have a great capacity for intuition, although their normal reasoning, rational process, may not be so evident. It's more an intuitive process, and it seems to be the fall of the lesser modalities of Mercury that we are talking about. Every fall is an exaltation, every exaltation can be a fall. Simply, what does it mean? That after the stage of initiation in Capricorn, look at Mercury in relation to the third decanate of Capricorn, along with the Sun and Vulcan, that after the stage of initiation in Capricorn, as the result of the reversal of the wheel, and the consequent experiences, which occurred in one sense many lives before this third initiation, and after the triumph of Scorpio, in which Mercury is also powerful, being the hierarchical ruler, and the mind has two phases to pass through, the control of the motions and the illumination, the power of the mind is very strong in Scorpio, and I think quite strong in Scorpio because in Capricorn because of the third decanate, the power of the mind lessens steadily, the mind per se, let's call it that, because, you know, intuition is the transcendental mind, so it's the mind per se. The power of the mind lessens steadily till finally, like other aspects of form, life in the three worlds. So here he is talking about the concrete mind, obviously, concrete mind. It comes to an end, and its meaning and illuminating aspects between soul and physical brain are no longer required because we have direct contact between the soul and physical brain and between the intuition and physical brain. So mind as a mediator, Mercury as a mediator, translating into symbols and various mediatory forms the direct vision and knowledge of the intuition, that is no longer needed. The man comes definitely into full soul consciousness without the reasoning mind as a mediator. Let's put that in. Without the, and we'll put this reasoning mind as the mediator. He will be subject then to pure reason, but pure reason is not reasoning occurring in time and under sequential Saturn. So the man comes definitely into full soul consciousness, requires now no mediator, but deals directly himself with his emanating source. So we have the physical brain and the soul in direct connection, and even direct connection with the spiritual triad. Mercury is then met with again under another name, this time as the Sun, mediating between the higher aspects, soul and spirit. For Mercury and the Sun are one. Now this is interesting. Now, Mercury is then the ruler of Buddhi. Mercury then the ruler or expression of Buddhi, which mediates between the monad and the soul, soul on its own plane. Through Mercury, the mind is illumined and relation is established between personality and soul. That's usually how it operates before the fall occurs. As Mercury, the sun, the mediator, shifts to a still higher plane. It's interesting about the sun as mediator, because when you look at the position of the sun in the double diamond, I hate to take a little bit of a detour here, but if we go over to page 610 and we see the position of the sun, we will see it in a mediating position, a transforming position. It is mediating between the very highest influences and the lower influences. This is the double diamond. Okay. So the mind is illumined at first in the first function of Mercury, and relation is established between personality and soul. We don't get direct soul impression, perhaps. We get mentally mediated soul impression. The Mercury translates the soul impression through symbols and words and other mediatory forms. But Mercury, as the sun, the mediator, shifts to a still higher plane, that's the Buddhic plane, and is no longer mediator between two different stages in consciousness, such as soul and personality consciousness, but between life, which is not consciousness per se, and consciousness itself. Mercury does this, and even Jupiter in Gemini does this as well. This will necessarily be incomprehensible to you at present, for it is not a mediatorship between differences, but a fusion of what is already related. Are you any wiser for that statement? So here we have, well, I wonder if we are any wiser. Let's just say spirit and soul are already related, certainly. Spirit and soul are definitely related, for spirit has, let's capitalize it, spirit has, and spell it correctly, has taken up its place as the central fire in the jewel, in the lotus. So they are definitely related, but now there is, via Mercury, since Mercury and the Sun are one, a fusion between spirit and soul. And this is occurring, this fusion between spirit and soul occurs after the third initiation, and is consummated at the fourth initiation, and still more fully fulfilled, and still more fulfilled at the fifth. Because the spiritual triad is still active at the fifth initiation, and the spiritual triad is the real soul. So we're not mediating here between two aspects, like, let us say, let's see, let's look at this again here. This is no longer a mediatorship between two different stages of consciousness, but between life, which is distinct from consciousness. DK talks about moving onward into life. He says, past a certain point, it is not consciousness that we are interested in acquiring, although even great logoi have consciousness, but a penetration, an onward movement into life itself. Mercury has a high function here, as a mediator between life and consciousness, per se. So Mercury, in relation to nirvanic mind, even beyond transcendental mind, a kind of mind associated with the nirvanic plane or the atmic plane, is bringing the will, the life aspect, fully into consciousness, and is a transmitter of sort of a higher quality or a higher principle, an enlivening principle. Mercury is so often involved with enlivening. It is involved with the etheric body, the vital body, which is the great enlivener of the physical body, and there is the whole question of enlivening the egoic body by the revelation of the content of the jewel in the lotus, which is a direct presence of the monad. Okay. So Mercury, in a way, becomes the sun, and the, you know, from a certain point of view, The monad is the sun as well. But the sun is considered a sort of a triadal mediator between the supreme spirit. Really, there is the sun and then three aspects of the sun and as the triad, and then the egoic lotus is the sun, and then the personality is the sun, and even the physical body considered as a kind of a sun etherically. So there are different aspects of the sun. Mercury and the sun are one, especially in its Buddhic functioning. You know, one seeks to ponder on these things in great depth and persistently. Now, we have reached that point. Yeah. Well, one day I'll send all this to you with the notes, but of course you can freeze your screen at any point and you can see what is here, so maybe there's not so much urgent need for that. We've come to the question of the decanates now, and the decanates in relation to Pisces, let's see here, we have to go up a little bit. Yeah, the 1, 2, 3 wheel of consciousness is the fourth wheel of form. By reversing the decanate order on the wheel of consciousness. Then there's the wheel of form, which Nicholas Nilén, how he sees it. He's a very fine astrologer in all of these matters, and in general, of course. And to a degree, decay. Then the Al and Leo decanates are there, and the Sephiroth decanates are there. The Al and Leo decanates, we remember, are based upon the rulerships of the triplicity in which a particular sign is found. Like Aries is found in the fire triplicity, Aries, Leo, and Sagittarius. So the rulers of Aries, Leo, and Sagittarius will be important decanate rulers. When it comes to Sephiroth, he is proceeding rather sequentially outward from Saturn, it seems, and moving inward, Saturn, Jupiter, Mars, Sun, how does it go? Mars, Sun, and Venus, Mercury, Moon. That is his usual method. Yeah, Venus, Mercury, Moon. Then he goes out again, the longest period being that of Saturn. Next shorter is Jupiter. Next shorter is Mars. Next shorter is the Sun. Period, geocentrically considered, around the Earth. At least it's an appearance. It appears that these planets are revolving around the Earth in a certain period, but really they are revolving around the Sun. Otherwise, the Sun couldn't be included, as the Sun is, in fact, appearing to revolve around the Earth from the geocentric perspective. Okay, so let me... I'll do it this way. And we'll make it just a little... Yeah, that'll be good. Okay. All right. Oops. Okay. Yeah, there we go. Okay. Now, let's see what DK says about this. And we'll look at some other charts I've created for this. The same symbolic mode of interpretation must govern also our understanding of the three decanates. Both Leo, Alan Leo, and Sephiroth give a list of the decanates, and between them there is much resemblance, but there is, however, an important difference. Leo, Alan Leo, approaches the closer to the esoteric interpretation of astrology, whilst, and that's a general statement, whilst Sephiroth is purely esoteric, says the Tibetan, although occasionally Sephiroth's decanates are accepted as the truly esoteric ones, as in the case of Gemini. According to Sephiroth, the three decanates are governed by Saturn, Jupiter, and Mars. Now let's take a look at that. Here are the Sephiroth decanates, and we'll go down, and we have right here, here is his Pisces in its color lavender. And we have Saturn, Jupiter, and Mars. That's the, and you see how we are coming inward from Saturn to Jupiter, Jupiter to Mars, Mars to the Sun, and so forth, with the shortening of the period around the Earth. Okay, Saturn, Jupiter, and Mars. And DK essentializes the meaning very well, in short statements. They're governed by Saturn, Jupiter, and Mars, presenting to the undeveloped man who is still not working on the wheel of consciousness, presenting the opportunity to work off karma, and that would probably be found in the third decanate, which for the average man is entered as if it were the first decanate, and to be successful, Jupiter, in doing so. So presenting the opportunity to work, now whenever you find the word work, watch for Saturn, to work off karma and to be successful in doing so, that is Jupiter, and indicating the method employed, that of conflict or war. So Mars gives the opportunity to work off karma. Karma through conflict. Okay. So, Ellen, so this is, we see here, we can see here the method, let's see, this is Pisces, okay. There's different ways of doing this. The Sephiroth decanates are found here, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn. Now, from another point of view, we could consider them to be Saturn, Jupiter, and Mars. See, Sephiroth, what he did, he always considered the counterclockwise order. He was never reversing the order. So when we're talking about the first decanate in the usual sense, we're dealing with 0 to 10 degrees. Well, Sephiroth puts Saturn in that position. From 10 to 20, Jupiter, and finally, the third, the 20 to 30 would be Mars. But of course, what really happens here is that we enter, as an average individual, the sign from the opposite angle. And so we have Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn instead of Saturn, Jupiter, and Mars. When you're dealing with the decanates, you have to be willing to turn the wheel in both directions at the same time, and not to look for a totally clear definition of each decanate space, but as DK says, they are fluid. So you see how I've arranged these. One of the ways of operating here, let's see what further DK says. DK gives us Jupiter, Moon, and Mars, as we'll see in a minute, and so it's possible to reverse these and have the average man entering in the third decanate, which for him is the first, with Mars, then going through the Moon, and then Jupiter. And then, as the wheel is reversed, and as the man begins to aspire, then the normal clockwise, counterclockwise order of the planets would be Jupiter, Moon, and Mars. You see the you see how I've done it with this kind of green star representing the mind and the lower integrating personality, and the blue star representing complete spiritual fulfillment. These particular charts, I think, can be studied with profit. So let's see what else DK says here. Okay, so Alan Leo gives us Jupiter, the Moon, and Mars. Now, Alan Leo, again, is always operating in the counterclockwise version, just like Sephiroth is. We have to lay these planets out in the counterclockwise version, which means from 0 to 10, 10 to 20, 20 to 30, and then move backwards or clockwise in the case of the average individual who is responding to these planets, to these decanates, in a way that strictly affects his personality and not his soul or spirit. So Leo gives us Jupiter, the Moon, and Mars. He indicates, therefore, and DK will essentialize here, he indicates, therefore, the success, which is incident to proved discipleship, So that is experienced in relation to the first decanate in Pisces, 0 to 10, and consequent readiness for initiation. The seeing of the vision with which Jupiter rewards the disciple. Okay, so all of these things pertain to the first decanate. He gives us Jupiter, the Moon and Mars, and so here is success, that's the Jupiterian word, which is incident to prove discipleship. So in that first decanate, we are proving that we have made many relinquishments and are ready truly for the life of service and even eventual saviorship. The success which is incident to prove discipleship and consequent readiness for initiation, because Jupiter is always an expansion of consciousness. And when that expansion of consciousness has been achieved, the man is initiate before he is initiated. So he is sustaining a certain expansion of consciousness. He proves he is ready, therefore, for initiation. And he sees a vision of that which lies ahead. Jupiter always is the planet of vision. The second ray is related closely to eyesight and to seeing things in a synthetic manner. With the eye, we can see many factors simultaneously, far more than we can hear and discriminate, and we are able to see them all in relation. That is synthesis, that is the second ray type of synthesis. The seeing of the vision with which Jupiter rewards the disciple, and then the experience, now he's moving to the second decanate, the experience which Vulcan confers. Now, why Vulcan? Because he had mentioned the moon. So what is involved here? Vulcan has been hitherto hidden. Hidden by what? Hidden by the moon, right? Hidden by the moon. But its influence has steadily superseded all lunar control. In other words, the spiritual will. The spiritual will overcomes lunar instinct. So its influence has steadily superseded all lunar control, for the personality or form side of life is lost to sight in the radiance of the sun, the soul. Now Vulcan and the sun are also one, like Mercury and the sun are also one. Remember, Vulcan, a planet of blinding light. And when it is said of Taurus that it confers blinding light, it's the light of Venus is not the blinding light, it's the light of Vulcan, which is so close to the sun, and produces that overpowering light experience, which is experienced at the enlightenment, or the third initiation, as St. Paul experienced it. It's a mixture of the first ray with the power of light. So the personality or form side of life, which is the moon, is lost to sight in the radiance of the sun, the soul, represented by Vulcan. The light of Vulcan and the light of the sun are one light. Okay, and these three, Mercury and the sun are one, Vulcan and the sun are one, then there's the sun, and these three, Mercury, Vulcan, and the sun, stand for a synthesis and a radiance which eventually dims the light of Mercury as it falls into the background, and Vulcan too becomes invisible and only the sun remains. Now, we also meet Mercury, Vulcan, and the sun in the last decan of Capricorn. We will be studying that, and that is an initiatory decanate, where the sun finally is the major ruler, and when the person conquers the mountain at the third initiation. So in this particular case, we have another reason for the sort of fall of Mercury, and it's related to the second decanate, as is Vulcan. So the moon is lost to sight, the mind falls away, the spiritual will of Vulcan recedes into the presence of the spirit, which the sun stands for. We have consequently a vision of the sun, the experience of the personality and effort, which is the mode of attainment governed by Mars. So the experience of the personality and effort are the mode of attainment governed by Mars, and this is the final decanate. So we have a great vision in the second decanate, a great vision. In that light we shall see a greater light. And that's the light of Vulcan and the sun. So we really find, whoops, disappeared there. We really find four planets involved in the second decanate. Four planets involved in the second decan. We have the moon. We have Mercury, which is falling away in the blinding light of Vulcan. And then we have the presence of the sun. So we have successful discipleship under Jupiter, first decanate. We have a great vision, an experience of liberating light in the second decanate. And we have this ongoing battle, the experience of the personality, which is the mode of attainment governed by Mars. It is an application through effort of all that is seen. An application through effort of all that is seen in the second decan. And it is a preparation for moving forward into Aries, which interestingly, from Alan Leo's perspective, has a first decanate ruled by Mars, but from the perspective of the Tibetan, it is a Jupiter rulership, strangely enough. So Mars is preparing the way. Mars in the last decanate of Pisces is preparing the way for this expansive Jupiterian experience in the first decan of Aries. And also there is a Venus rulership that DK hints at, as given by Alan Leo in that first decan of Aries. Let's look at this. You can write a whole book on the decanates, and esoterically this has been done. I think Stephen Pugh has done a very good book on the decanates called The 72 Faces of Man, and other people have offered important speculations. So here we have three constellations related to the three decanates of Pisces, and there are, given in the Labors of Hercules, three extra zodiacal constellations, each one of them related to a particular constellation. So the band that ties the fishes together, Andromeda, the chained woman, and Cepheus, or Cepheus, the king, are the three associated extra zodiacal constellations. We can ask ourselves, well, look, is it legitimate to associate one of these constellations with one of the decanates? Well, there are three and three, and perhaps there is a kind of special emphasis with one of these constellations associated with one particular decanate. However, I would say that if you are a Pisces, you have the possibility of experiencing all three constellations. Just the way if you are an Aries individual, you have the possibility of experiencing Cetus the sea monster, Cassiopeia the enthroned queen, and Perseus the hero. All of them are open to you, but there might be a particular emphasis in a particular life. So the band, the Antikarana, the Sutratma, the band holding the fishes together, the lower Antikarana, and if we consider the higher fish to represent soul and the lower fish to represent personality. So it is a band of consciousness and also a band of life. Andromeda is the chained woman, and she has to be released by the hero Perseus, and Cepheus is the king. It's not a very prominent constellation, but it has a high representation as Sanat Kumara, or the planetary logos. Now, if we move upward a little here, let's see, if I push this over to the other side, I can do that. And then I would perhaps, excuse me for a second, as I make my, just a little bit big here, it automatically goes to the right hand. So I don't think I can do anything about it. Maybe I can. Yeah, I think I can. And I will. So I'll try to switch this around, and it'll be a little peculiar, perhaps. All right, I'll be looking at it from a different direction. But in any case, we should be able to see just a little better. Now, moving this away slightly, we come to the wheel of consciousness. This is what is given by the Tibetan. Okay, and he gives Jupiter, the moon, and Mars. This is veiling Vulcan. Now, I see here that we have the Sun and Mercury also involved in the third decanate. So let's see why that should be the case. We have consequently a vision of the Sun, the experience of the personality, which is the mode of attainment governed by Mars. So only the Sun remains. I think that perhaps this is not correct. I'm going to change this, or at least question this for the moment, and I'm going to put a line through it, because it looks to me like this vision of the Sun. Well, let's just say that the Sun and Mercury, if the Sun is the personality and Mercury is the mind, they are involved in falling away. But I'm not exactly sure that that's the way it should be done. All right, so here's the sixfold chart. And we have the proper method of procedure as Jupiter, the Moon, and Mars. So we are envisioning the Sun. From Jupiter we are looking towards the Sun or the Soul. The Moon is veiling Vulcan, suggesting the emergence of the Sun, with Mercury falling away. And Mars is the planet of battle, leading to the final Sun of Spirit, which Cepheus represents, with Mercury falling away. Now, down a little bit later in this chart, I go through six different methods of considering these decanates. And I'm going to make this a little smaller, okay? Now, we're not so concerned with the physical, strictly physical Lemurian approach. All of this is here. And you can freeze your screen at any time to read it if you want to. The emotional is here, and that is the Atlantean state. We're not so concerned with that specifically, nor are we concerned exactly with the lower mental personal aspect. We are moving in a counterclockwise manner from Mars. We are moving from Mars to the Moon and thence to Jupiter. But when we reach, in fact, the point where a reversal takes place and the person becomes an aspiring, spiritually oriented personality, we begin with Jupiter. And here we are, Jupiter's rule. Okay, here we are. Yeah. Okay, here is Jupiter applied to the aspirational, higher personal, integrating personality. We are still under the basic Jupiter rulership of Pluto, and we are still on the latter part of the mutable cross, but we are coming increasingly under Pluto. This is the initial phase of I leave the Father's home and turning back I save. And from Esoteric Astrology 333, we learn that the man is becoming the advanced man. He becomes sensitive to soul. He becomes the mediator between the soul and personality. So under this general Jupiterian phase, the man expands his outreach towards service and helpfulness, which he does under Jupiter. He grasps the importance of service and begins to offer himself to others in self-sacrifice. He begins to demonstrate the urge towards self-abnegation, using incipient Pluto to detach from his involvement, his desirous involvement with the physical plane, and via Neptune, which begins to come into focus because he is turning into a disciple, via Neptune, his sensitivity to others is rapidly growing. Let's see where we are in terms of time. Okay, well, we may not make it here. We'll do the best we can. Now we start to apply the decanate rulers, and on the counterclockwise wheel, which is the reversed wheel, we have Jupiter ruling the first, the moon Vulcan ruling the second, and we have Mars, which I say is struggling towards the sun, with Mercury meaning less and less. So now we are becoming an advanced man, and we are under the first decanate of Jupiter, from 0 to 10 degrees. The advanced man sees a broader vision of divinity and believes. These are words, Jupiterian words. The advanced man sees a broader vision of divinity and believes in the reality of the spiritual dimensions of life. He's not yet soul conscious, but he knows there is this higher source and higher power. He's oriented towards it. He wants to include it. The influence of the band. We are going to apply the band to the first decanate in a specific sort of way. And the influence of the band connects his personal life with his increasing experience of inner spiritual dimensions. So we have Jupiter dominant because it is the exoteric ruler and it is still operative on the mutable cross, and Pluto is beginning to phase in. And let's see what else we say here. Through all decanates, though all decanate rulers can be associated with the personal aspirational phase, Jupiter, ruler of the first decanate of the Wheel of Consciousness, is especially associated with the personal aspirational phase. I don't have to go into all the details here. I think you can get the idea. Now, for this aspiring human being who is not yet the disciple, we move into the second decanate, and how would it operate? Well, we have the second decanate ruler as the moon, as Andromeda. Veiling Vulcan. Vulcan, by the way, is a breaker of chains. It is a forger of chains and the hammer which breaks the chains. So Vulcan can lead to extreme attachment as well as detachment. These sacred planets can be operative in the early phases. So applying the decanate ruler of the moon veiling Vulcan to this particular stage of development of the advancing man, what do we have? The advancing man learns to bring his personality vehicles into shape. Vulcan shapes things up under the impress of the higher will, which is beginning to make its impact, something higher than the strictly personal will. Or he aligns his personal will with what he senses as a higher will. Under the influence of Andromeda, he learns to bind the unsuitable expression of the lunar vehicles. He learns to hold them so that they can no longer dominate. They are in bondage. These lunar vehicles must be in a state of bondage to the soul. And so the power of Vulcan is a binding influence. It disciplines these vehicles. And I'm not going to go through the other parts. You can read them yourself. Then we reach the third decanate, and we're applying the decanate ruler Mars, which is struggling towards a kind of final sun represented by Cepheus, with Mercury falling away and meaning less in the general glory of the sun. I want to kind of look one more time at what it says here. Because, you know, as D.K. writes about the decanates, he can be very elusive. We have Mercury, Vulcan, and the Sun stand for a synthesis and a radiance which eventually dims the light of Mercury as it falls into the background, and Vulcan, too, becomes invisible and only the Sun remains. We have, consequently, a vision of the Sun, the experience of the personality, and effort. Now, this vision of the Sun, This is Jupiterian. Looking towards the second decanate, we have the vision of the sun, the experience of personality, and this is the moon giving way to Vulcan and the sun. This is the moon giving way to Vulcan and the sun. In other words, there is a high radiance occurring, and effort. which is the mode of attainment governed by Mars as we are struggling towards that final synthesis. We can see the language is elusive. I'm going to read it all again because I think that it is just very interesting. So Alan Leo gives us Jupiter, the Moon, and Mars. He indicates, therefore, the success, that's Jupiter, which is incident to proved discipleship and consequent readiness for initiation, the seeing of the vision with which Jupiter rewards the disciple, we're still in the first decanate, and the experience, which is what Vulcan confers, with the Vulcan being veiled by the Moon. Vulcan has been hitherto hidden, but its experience, its influence has steadily superseded all lunar control, for the personality of form life is lost to sight in the radiance of the sun, the soul. So that personality, which is the Moon, and how Vulcan replaces the Moon, is lost to sight in the radiance of the sun, the soul. So we have Vulcan replacing, the Moon, and the sun replacing Vulcan. The Moon, and the sun replaces Vulcan. Then we have the light of the Vulcan and the light of sun are one light. And these three, Mercury, Vulcan, and the sun, stand for a synthesis and a radiance which eventually dims the light of Mercury as it falls into the background, and Vulcan too becomes invisible, and only the sun remains. And when it says only the sun remains, it seems to hint finally, the result of the decanate experiences in Pisces gives us the final sun, which is Shambolic, it is Cepheus, it is Sanat Kumara. Okay, we have consequently a vision of the sun, and that is Jupiterian, and then we have the experience of the personality, which is the Moon, but it gives way to Vulcan and the sun, and effort. And effort towards what? You know, the sun is exalted in Aries, and the sun is exalted in Aries, and through Mars we move towards that exaltation. So Mars is fighting to reach the blazing synthetic sun, which Cepheus represents. It is the Shambolic synthesis. And there are a great many battles found in this last decanate. Even as you're passing through the decanates, as the Moon moves through the sign in 2.5 days or 2 days, let us say, we can feel the changes as the decanates occur. So, you know, there is veiled language here. And I would like to say that, you know, it's possible to be completely clear about it. I would love to be completely clear. But that is not the case at the moment. Okay, so I'm going to erase the line that I put through this. And I'm going to call this a final sun. Final sun. And if here, veiling Vulcan, I will say, which gives way to the sun, replacing Vulcan. So Mars fights its way towards a final sun, and Mercury falls back. Okay. Now, of course, we could take the sidereal approach as well and look at Saturn, Jupiter, and Mars. Whether we should be going forward or backward, sidereal would say bondage from 0 to 10, some degree of success under Jupiter, and then finally Mars. How did DK put it? Let us take a look. He says three decanates from sidereal. You can work off karma. You can be successful in working off karma. So you're faced with difficulty from 0 to 10. From 10 to 20, you're working off the karma successfully, and you're doing so through conflict. But if we want to think about the reversal of the wheel, then we would enter, using Sepharial's rather exoteric descriptions, we would enter with Mars, proceed to Jupiter, and end with Saturn. And of course, that ending with Saturn can be a condition of very strong karmic bondage. All right. Well, we are there, and I'm going to have to begin with the decanates again at some point. We have reached the point where we have been analyzing the aspiring man in relation to the clockwise decanates given by Alan Leo and the Tibetan, which are Jupiter, then the moon Vulcan, implying the sun as well, because Vulcan is replaced by the sun, and finally Mars and the struggle, I would say, towards a still greater sun. What we have yet to do is to discuss the decanates of Pisces for the disciple, who is now coming under the influence of Pluto, and for the initiate. Okay. Well, let's see. I think you can get a good idea of what is going on there. So that's what we'll take up. That's what we will take up next. You know, Pisces is a very elusive sign, and I see that the Tibetan himself is being rather elusive in considering these things. I want to see whether, here is the wheel, and I'll take a look at what Nicholas has done, and look at, there's so many things here. He's given us the sephirial decanates, so we sort of enter via Saturn, go to Jupiter, and then Mars, which is ruling the final decanate of Pisces, Sephirial would have done it differently, but Nicholas did it this way, bringing in the clockwise dimension. And then we have Jupiter, Moon, Vulcan, and then we have Mars with the Sun and Mercury implied. Now, whether the Sun and Mercury should be related to this blinding light Vulcan experience, or whether it should be related to the final decanate, that is, I would say, up in the air. Okay, I hope I haven't been too confusing here regarding these decanates. Take a good look at this wheel, and you can sort of take a snapshot of it on your computer, and I think you will understand some important aspects. None of us who are theorizing about the decanates agree with each other entirely. DK has left a very fluid condition in which we have to use our interpretive abilities. But in general, the Alan Leo decanates are Jupiter, the Moon Vulcan, and Mars. And somehow in the last two decanates, the Sun and Mercury, the Sun growing and Mercury falling away, are implied. So now we will have the great invocation. And, yes. Okay. Point of light, from the point of light within. Okay. Now that won't work. I have to do it in a different way. There we are. Okay, the great invocation. And we have taken ourselves now to the end of the Esoteric Astrology Adventure, number 58. Okay. End, EAA 58, and we are on page, we're on a page somewhere here, 133. So we have moved from page 131 to 133, page 131 to 133. Okay, the great invocation. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men, let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men, may Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Friends, that will take us to the end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 58, and we will continue with 59 in the interesting matter of the decanates and try to see how it is that even Vulcan is gradually replaced by the Sun, the power of the Sun at the end of the Pisces decanates, given the fact that Pisces, Aries, Aries, Pisces will one day be a single sign, perhaps in a zodiac of 10, we are dealing with the powerful influence of the Sun as it grows, as the representative of spiritual shambolic synthesis at the end of the Pisces experience. Okay, so we will see you then for the next one, and there's a lot to study. Okay, bye-bye.